Hi, I'm Kat.
And I'm Emma.
If you love the Dead Parent Club podcast, you can help support its future using the Acast supporter feature.
Now, it's up to you how much you give, and there is no regular commitment. So if you can and you want to, please do hit the link in the show description to support now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, you're listening to the DPC podcast, the podcast where we talk about all things Dead Parent, the good, the bad, and the banter, hosted by
Sam
and Kat. On this week's episode, we have a great guy called Josh Worth. Josh approached us on Instagram after finding us and wanted to get involved. So obviously, like we would, we invited him onto the podcast, and I can honestly say that this is up there with one of my favourites. Josh lost his dad very suddenly, just over a year ago. His mindset is incredible. Me and Sam love talking to him so much. We talk about navigating grief and late onset grief, how we cope with grief in the workplace, how important exercise and health are for your mindset and your body, struggling to find the emotional capacity to start relationships with people, and just how his life has completely changed. And now he chooses to chase happiness, and it doesn't matter what you do in life, but that is the most important thing. He has a side business as well, which he speaks about, which was born from his experience. As a personal branding expert, you can find him on Instagram at joshworth. Definitely give him a follow. And yeah, I really hope you enjoyed this week's episode as much as we enjoyed recording it.
So, more about you. Where are you from?
So, I'm originally from Telford in Shropshire, but I've recently moved to London. So, as of a couple of weeks ago.
Congratulations.
Oh, wow. How are you finding it?
Yeah, thank you. It's great, to be honest. I think I've settled in really well. It's a very different vibe. So, Telford is very small town mentality. But because I lived in Sydney, I kind of needed a change. Like, I just wanted to get out there a bit more and just enjoy myself.
How long were you in Sydney for?
So in Sydney for a year and a half, and I was in Melbourne for a little bit as well.
I swear you've definitely got a twang to your accent.
Yeah, a little bit.
You definitely don't sound like you're from Telford.
It's the affliction, isn't it? Like the ending sometimes, I get that quite a
lot. Yeah.
I mean, it's a blessing. I'd rather have a slight Aussie twang than a Telford accent for sure.
You don't sound like you're from Telford whatsoever. I thought you were definitely from down south.
Cool. Well, I'll take that as a compliment.
No offence to the Midlanders out there.
Yeah, come on, Catherine.
Have you listened to any of the podcasts?
I have, yeah. I've listened to bits. I haven't listened to the latest one, but... honestly, I'm blown away by what you guys are doing. I think it's absolutely awesome. So massive credit to what you've done. I think it's incredible that you're able to turn something so awful into something so positive for other people. It takes an awful lot, like, to put yourself in that situation. So yeah, well done.
You know what? It's something that I'd never thought of before, because I think when we originally set this up, I don't think we thought it was going to be a positive platform. I don't think we consciously thought, oh, we're going to kind of make it a positive place to be. But that's just how it's happened, isn't it, Sam? Like, I've had a few people say, oh, I really like the way that you guys don't focus on the negative stuff all the time and you kind of highlight the good stuff. And that's actually so true.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I think as well is because you set out that way without those intentions. That's why it's so good, because you're so authentic. And that's like, that trumps everything at the moment, right? You've got to be authentic, and success comes when you're your true self and you put yourself out there in a vulnerable way, because people resonate with that. Like, if you had intentions of getting like 1 million followers or 1 million downloads, then it shows because you're trying hard, whereas you've done the complete opposite and just not expected anything. But as a result, you've had the success so far that you've had.
Yeah, honestly, we thought, oh, like, I bet we'll get like a few like downloads here and there, like, and suddenly it's just kind of, it's snowballed a little bit like over time, which is so cool.
Yeah, well, thanks for that, mate.
So we will dive right in. Yep. So actually, one thing, how old are you? I'd just like to know.
So I'm 27.
You're 27, nice age.
Does that mean, are you a fellow 27-year-old?
I mean, I'm not, no, but I imagine 27 is quite, I think about life now and I think about life at 27 and I think maybe life will be a little bit more like, yeah, I've got a bit more together at 27, you know?
How old are you both?
I'm still 23.
Yeah, wait, Catherine, I can't believe you're still 23.
I feel like I've been stuck in time for like years. I'm still 23.
She's nearly 24 and I'm 25.
Wow, so young. You've got such a big life ahead of you. These are the important years. The next couple of years, you'll find that, like, oh, man, it just, it
oh, damn, that really freaks me out.
We'll suddenly blossom, Catherine.
Oh, I really hope so.
It's needed.
Oh, God.
So, Josh, obviously, this is the DPC podcast. Can you please tell us how you are affiliated? What's your story?
I'm in the DPC because my dad died last year in March, the March 1st, in fact. And it was a complete shock to us. So a few days prior to that, on a Sunday evening, I was laying on my bed. My parents are downstairs. My sister was downstairs as well, I think. And I heard this like shriek from my mom, like, Josh, you need to get down here now. It's funny how you remember like every single minute detail about everything. And so I went downstairs as you would. And my dad was clutching his chest. He was like super sweaty, like real, like he was trying to rip all his clothes off in the kitchen. So initially, obviously your mind thinks, oh God, like, is he having a heart attack? Which was what we thought was the case to start with. So my sister was quite upset at this point. Like, I mean, rightly so. It's quite an intense moment, but I feel like I've got quite a cool head in this situation. So I was like, right. So I sat her down on the stairs away from it so she couldn't see dad in pain. And I said, right, we need someone to call an ambulance. So can you please do that? Meanwhile, I ran over to one of our neighbors who is or was a fireman. They're a family of firefighters. So father, son, daughter. So thinking, right, first aid, let's see if they can kind of suss out the situation. So I ran over, brought them over, and they weren't really sure what was happening. In fact, actually, the daughter's girlfriend, she is a qualified nurse. So she came over as well. She was there at the time, and she was just speaking to my dad, trying to calm him down because we didn't really know what to do. Meanwhile, my sister had called the ambulance, and it felt like forever. Like, I literally... It feels like the longest period I've ever had to wait for an ambulance to arrive.
How long were you waiting? Do you know?
I honestly couldn't tell you. Like, it was such a blur. I was pacing up and down the kitchen, you know, trying to support my dad, make sure he was okay. They arrive and everything like slows down. They're very controlled. They obviously don't get caught up in the situation, which is great. It's their job. And initially, they kind of thought, well, he's having a heart attack. Like, it makes sense. So in Telford, there are two hospitals. There is Telford and Shrewsbury. So they were quite indecisive on which hospital to go to. In the end, they took him to Telford Hospital and then said, right, we need to move him and we need to transfer him because they're not quite sure that it is a heart attack and they need to investigate further. So they decided to take him to Stoke Hospital.
Is he still in pain at this point?
Yeah, so he's still in pain at this point. He had had like four rounds of morphine, or three or four rounds of morphine. And he was still in pain. Like you could physically see it. In fact, I've even got the detail wrong. It was, so he went to Shrewsbury Hospital. And I can remember seeing it now. And we were waiting in the room, as you do, as a family members, whilst he was in A&E. And then they decided to move him up to Stoke, which is, from us, it's about 45 minutes, so an hour away.
Yeah.
And up until this point, I was completely calm. I was like, right, okay, it's okay. He's in good hands. Everything seems to be okay. They're dealing with it. And then I remember as he got wheeled into the ambulance outside the hospital to go on the trip up to Stoke, I like walked ahead of my sister and I was like literally just burst into tears, like trying to keep it together enough so that my sister wouldn't see, because then I was going to drive the two of us up to Stoke Hospital. But like seeing someone you love in pain is not a nice feeling, like especially because he'd been in pain at this point for maybe an hour and a half, so you know that it's not great, right? It's like there's something wrong there. So then fast forward to Stoke Hospital. As you can imagine, I raced up to Stoke and just about beat the ambulance up there, and then he gets into one of the wards, and there seems to be like no news for ages. By this point, we'd called my brother, who lives in High Wycombe. So he made the journey up from High Wycombe to Stoke. So it's a long way, right? So it's like 2.5 hours. So he'd made the journey up there. He was with my mom in the waiting room. And they kept coming backwards, back and forth, saying, okay, so we're not quite sure it's a heart attack. It could be something else. Then it changed to, okay, he's definitely had a heart attack. And then it changed again to, okay, it's definitely not a heart attack.
Oh my god!
We actually think it's what's called and it's completely eluded me now. Aortic dissection. That's it. So essentially, what an aortic dissection is the main artery that pumps blood away from your heart. It kind of comes out of your heart at the top, I believe, and then wraps around towards your back and then bends all the way down to feed the rest of your body. So it's quite a complex artery, and
it's a major artery, isn't it?
It's the main feeder of blood to the bottom half of your body, away from your heart. So what happened is he'd suffered a rupture out of the blue in that artery, like really close to his heart. And obviously at the time, nobody knows, because it's a very similar symptom to a heart attack. So the difficulty there is that you have a lot of blood loss, obviously immense amounts of pain, because your heart is essentially trying to pump blood and it's not going anywhere. So it's really struggling. So he goes into one of the waiting rooms. He seems to be pretty stable. He's had a lot of morphine at this point. So we all go in and take turns to talk to him. And they said to us he needs to go in for surgery, and there is a high probability that he won't make it out. So you can imagine at this point that like the emotions around everybody, like naturally I'm one of those people in the family that tries to keep everybody sane, or like I try to look after everybody and protect everybody and look on the positive side. Like I've always been a super positive guy. But this moment, like I remember thinking like this is serious now. Like there is a very high chance here that he's not going to make it. And so we all said like our goodbyes in like a non-goodbye way, which was quite strange. Told him I loved him. It's something that I never used to do very often. Like as a family, we never really told each other that we loved each other. It was just kind of like a given. And then the hardest thing that I've ever had to see was that my mom had to take his wedding ring off. So he was like, oh God, like, no, I don't want him to take it off. Like, please don't let them take it off. And so my mom was like, look, you know, it has to be done, because if you're going in for surgery, you can't have metals in there and stuff. So she took it off and she was distraught, like trying to pick someone up off that. It's such a crazy feeling. And he goes to have a surgery, and he makes it through the first surgery. So he gets a stent put in, which is essentially a piece of like piping that that gets inserted into the artery. It expands so that it stops the blood flow from escaping. But then they tell us that it had failed. So they wanted to put him in for a second time. Now, by this time, there's crazy amounts of snow outside. We have to make the drive back every night from Stoke to Telford because they say, you know, he's stable. There's no real point to you being here because, you know, we don't really know. And so on the Wednesday, we head back up. And at this point, he deteriorated. He wasn't really talking much. He was out of it pretty much all day. Like, he'd obviously been through pretty intense surgery. So Wednesday was pretty much like a write-off in terms of getting to talk to him. And then Thursday comes. So Wednesday night, Mom said, let's just go back. We'll come back in the morning. Fingers crossed it'll be okay. He won't need to go in for a second surgery because they weren't sure that it was entirely needed. They kind of wanted things to settle down first because, as you can imagine, after surgery, like it messes the whole body up.
Yeah, it's a huge risk, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So on the Thursday, we're traveling and my mom gets a phone call. So we're traveling in two separate cars, me, my brother, my sister and my mom in a different car. And my mom gets a phone call. She pulls over and only find out about this like after she called us. And the doctor said, oh, hey, are you nearby? Like, are you coming? And mom's like, yeah, we're on our way. Like, what's wrong? And they said, oh, no, it's okay. Like, we'll talk to you when you get here. So as you can imagine, it's a bit like, oh, God, like, what's happening? So we get there and we find out that, in fact, actually, yeah, so we arrived. My brother and I arrived first. And then the nurse and two nurses, a male and a female, walked out and said, like, can we talk to you in this room? And we said, like, can you wait for mom and my sister to get here? And they both looked at each other, like, really sheepishly to kind of be like, okay, what do we do? And at this point, like, I knew, like, it was abundantly obvious what they were about to deliver to us. So we waited. We waited for mom and my sister to get together 15 minutes later. And, so they delivered the news that dad hadn't made it. And yeah, he'd sadly passed away. And it was, like, the craziest feeling that you can't even explain. Like, I remember everything from that waiting room we were sat in, like where everybody was sat, like what the walls looked like, you know, what the emotions on people's faces were. I remember seeing like the clock in the corner and like the tissues on the side. That it's such a sterile environment. Mm-hmm. And anybody that's been through this, like, and had the whole hospital experience will appreciate this how sterile everything is. It's just like no character, no personality. Like, it's awful. And so then they say, well, you can go and see him, just say like final goodbyes, which is like kind of a weird thing in its own. And the difficult thing is, it's like he's in like an intensive care at this point. And he passed away in there on pretty much en route, like whilst we were driving to the hospital. And you see everybody else who's in such an awful position because it is intensive care. But one thing really stuck with me that my mom said was, like, my sister started crying like out of control, and at this point, like, I'd started crying myself. And she said, like, she got us together and said, like, look, guys, we need to be respectful for everybody around here as well, because it's not nice for them to see that this could be them, like, in the next day, week, month, whatever, because they're all in the same room. And that, like, really stuck me. It's like a profound moment. It kind of,
that's so thoughtful of your mum in that moment to think that.
Honestly, yeah, and I thought the same. It's really stuck with me since, that I've always been the family to put people first, and I'll give an example afterwards, I guess, in other things that we talk about. But for me, that was like a moment where I thought, wow, like, there's you going through this, like, literally, and you're thinking about other people in this situation, like, you know, to respect them and what's happening with them. So. Yeah, and then in terms of like how I heard about you guys, I mean, fast forward a good few months and flicking through Instagram as you do, and this girl called Laura popped up on my activity feed or like in the search or something. Someone had liked one of her posts.
Laura Duck.
Yes, Laura Duck. Yes.
Yeah. And
I started flicking through her Instagram, and I thought, like, at this point, I don't think she had many posts, but she was like talking freely about her mum having died, and I was like, wow, like, this girl is an inspiration. And then I saw her interaction with you guys and then what you were doing, and I'm not gonna lie, like, when I saw the title Dead Parent Club, the word dead stood out to me. I was like, wow, like, that's a bold word. It made me feel uncomfortable. And so I thought, because it's made me feel uncomfortable, I need to speak on this podcast. Wow. Like, I need to see what you guys are about. I need to get my word out there. Like, and I know we spoke in DMs as well. And I think the whole aspect of just me being a guy, it adds like a new element.
Yeah. Massively.
Yeah.
Because guys don't talk about this sort of stuff, right? Like, they talk. Yeah. Like, you know, I'm okay. But they don't really get to the nitty gritty stuff, which is critical, I think. So,
yeah, we do struggle to get guys on here. Like, not necessarily we don't approach guys to come on here, but they don't approach us very often. So yeah, we literally have to grasp the opportunity with both hands and literally just get as much as we can out of the guys that do come on here.
Because we love being able to get guys on here as well, because like I say, it is so important. There's such a lack of conversation.
And we have quite a lot of male listeners, so it's important that there's something for them to relate to as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure. And the packs you get from the hospital, like, they give you, like, pretty much as soon as people have died, they give you this pamphlet that's like, you know, bereavement letters, these people you can talk to. And it's so different to actually talk to other people who understand, as opposed to like having to go via official routes. Yeah. Like, you know, I still haven't had counseling. I've been putting it off and it just hasn't felt like the right time. And however, like, talking to people like you guys and like strangers, essentially, it's so much more valuable because you've shared the same experience. And I think that's what's absolutely critical.
Yeah.
Literally, this online community on Instagram at the moment for grief and people telling their stories and stuff is just amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
I can't believe we didn't find it sooner.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm so glad that people are just now like finding it just like through scrolling through Instagram, because it's not often something that you're going to go seek out, right? Because often you don't realize that you need it when, like, before you come across it, kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's very different to find you guys organically compared to, like, you see adverts for like grief help, or like Better are always advertising, targeting me, like, you know, talk to a counselor, all this sort of stuff. But it almost feels forced, like you say, when you need it. Like, I'm a big believer that things like appear and things come to you, and I don't think it's any coincidence that, like, you know, I saw you guys on Instagram through Laura's engagement with you, and here we are.
Oh, I'm so happy about that. Obviously not about your dad, but about your about how you found us afterwards. What did that look like for you then after your dad passed away in hospital? Like, did you guys then go home?
Interestingly, so that's a bit of a blur for me right now. Yes, we did. So because we're in two separate cars at this point, it was me and my brother and my mom and sister. So the plan was actually not to go straight home, as crazy as that may seem. So we drove to my grandparents. So my two sets of grandparents. So I have one nan on my dad's side, because my granddad passed away several years ago now. So he just had his mom. So we went there first, but we actually stopped by one of her friends to kind of get a bit of support as well, because, I mean, to tell a mother that her son had died is just like, you can't even imagine, can you? So we wanted someone else to be there with her. So we went there, we told her, and it was difficult. Like, how do you tell a woman that her son has died, given that he'd only visited her like 4 days earlier? She came to the hospital on the Wednesday night, but because dad was like so out of it, she didn't get a chance to speak to him. So like the last interaction she had with him, he would have been fine, sat on a sofa, like pigging his face out. All nans provide the food for you, don't they?
Does she have Nana's biscuits?
She does have Nana's biscuits. Nana's cakes as well. Like, you get like an assortment, like a full plate.
Yes. Love Nana's biscuits.
And then after that, we went to my other grandparents. So my mom's mom and my mom's stepdad, because her real dad passed away at a very similar age that I am, to be honest. And like, we were a lot closer to my mom's mom, because she'd always taken us under her wing, like as a whole family. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, so she actually passed away then like 5 months after dad. So towards the tail end of last year. And so like for my mom, it's obviously been such a tough year. Like last year, like obviously losing my dad and then losing her mom as well.
Yeah.
It's been an immense challenge, but you know, she's been an absolute rock, like such an inspiration as someone who's, yeah, she's had her moments, you know, and the stereotypical picking them up off the floor when like crying uncontrollably, like it's true sometimes. And you know, I've had to do that. And you come home from a long day at work and you find your mom just like sat in the kitchen floor, just like beside herself.
Grief is not pretty. Like, it is ugly, and I do think we're prepared for it before it happens. Absolutely not.
Oh, honestly, and that's such a good way of saying it. Like, nobody can prepare you for it. I do think there are varying degrees. Like, you know, my nan was very sick, so you kind of expect it to some degree. It's still not nice, but you kind of expect it. Whereas when family members, you know, get cancer or they die suddenly from heart attacks, or, you know, in dad's case, slightly different, but that really does like shake you to the core of who you are. And I think you have that tipping point of you either lose it completely or you leverage that to really build yourself as a stronger individual and those around you.
So true.
Speaking of those around you, did you have anyone around you at the time that you could speak to, except, you know, your mum and your immediate family?
Yeah, so I've been quite blessed really with different friendship groups. I don't just have like one set group. I've got quite a few little pockets here and there. I had a lot of support, like a lot of people were super friendly, really nice. I think the one thing that I really lacked was someone who understood. It's quite a strange feeling after someone dies. Like you don't know what to do with yourself. Like sometimes you think, should I be crying? Should I be spending my day crying? Like you feel guilty for going to the shops or for like dressing up to go out. It's like, it's so strange, isn't it? And then, but yeah, I mean, I had some fantastic people. Some people actually surprised me at how compassionate they were, given, especially some of my guy friends who on the face of it were very, not like lads, but you know, there's that boundary. You don't talk about your feelings to some of your guy friends. And some of them honestly really surprised me, like, you know, willing to do anything for me. So yeah, massively appreciate them.
And what was the most helpful thing that any of them kind of said or did at the time? Was there anything in particular like that was amazing? Or just anything that was just even just average that you really appreciated?
You know what? I think the genuine willingness of people to help and to be there, like there's a difference, I feel, when people say, I would do anything to help you, or, you know, let me know if there's anything I can do to help, compared with like, look, Josh, I know what's happened. Like, I will genuinely do anything for you right now. You literally just name whatever it is that you need and I will be there. Mm. And for me, I'm not the kind of guy that would take people up on that because I don't feel like I need it. But the fact that it's there is such an incredible feeling, especially from so many people as well.
You definitely know the difference between the people that send you the generic text of, oh, like, I'm here for you, anything you need. There's them, and then there's people that are like, seriously, like, call me, I'm right here. And the people that you know you can rely on, like, you can really easily filter them out, can't you? And I think those people surprise you afterwards. It's not always people that you expect that are the ones that are there most.
Absolutely. And to that point, like, people who say, oh, like, you know, it really sucks, like, it must be awful for you. That never really resonated with me. The people that I really got on with and our relationships changed for the better were the people that said, that's really shit. I can't even say anything that will change any of that. So I'm not going to say anything, but know that, like, if you need to go out for a drink, or if you want to chat, or if you just want to sit here next to somebody and watch TV together, like, and not talk, like, I will be that person. I will do that for you. And for me, that was like the real big things that people, the big ways that people help me.
Huge. How have you found like navigating it with people that you don't know, where it gets brought up in conversation? Because I find that sometimes I find it easy to navigate, where I'm just like, they ask you what your parents do, and I'm like, oh, my dad does this, my mum's dead or whatever. But I was really kind of impressed. I say impressed, but like, it was really thoughtful the other day when I met somebody that I haven't seen since I was a teenager, and they were asking me where I was living now, and I was like, oh, I don't live in Winnington anymore, like, I've moved, I live with my dad. And he was like, oh, I'm so sorry, like, last time I saw you, your parents were still together. I was like, oh no, my mum died. And he was like, you know what, Kat, like, I'm not going to say too much here. Like, I'm not going to say I'm really sorry and stuff, but like, that is really shit. And like, I hope that you guys and you and your dad are doing okay. And then he just carried on with the conversation and he just dealt with it really well. And that was the best I've seen most people deal with that answer. So many people just go like, oh,
yeah, literally like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And they just like run away. Bye.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, and that's the worst, right, is when people like skirt around it. They're like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean that. And then they kind of just go on a bit and you're like, right, like, it's happened. I'm not going
to
stop.
Yeah, it's not news to me.
Yeah.
But
it is so difficult.
And I suppose it's only just been a year for you.
Yeah,
so it's sort of like those milestones, isn't it? So it was... So dad died in March. His birthday was like, May 28th, actually.
Oh.
So, which was what, yesterday was it? Or 2 days ago as well. Ago. So we've had like the year milestone. We've had like two birthdays. Father's Day is coming up as well.
What did you do for like the year milestone and for your dad's birthday and stuff?
So for dad's birthday last year, it was just like a very quiet one. We just all like got together, just went out for some food, I think. For the year milestone, not an awful lot, to be honest. Like, it's a weird feeling. You feel the energy around the time. Like my mom in particular, like she works quite a lot. She's a carer, so she works like weekends, and it's hard to get days off and stuff. So she just wanted a bit of time. Like, my dad was cremated, so she went to the place where he was cremated, just had a walk around. It's like beautiful gardens, that sort of stuff. I was at work, so I kind of just took a bit of time off just to not really talk to many people. You really feel that it takes the wind out of your sails. There's no real way to describe it. You have this cloud over your head to some degree. And like, I'm a super positive guy, like all the time and always have been. And you just have to accept that some days you're just not going to be there, and that's absolutely fine.
I think I was actually talking to somebody about this earlier, where every other day we are in a constant battle with our grief, but on milestones and on birthdays of those people, I think we let our walls down a bit and we let ourselves feel it, and I think that's why we get quite subdued.
That's a really good way of looking at it. Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Constant battle, isn't it, every day?
Yeah, like for sure. Even in the small things. So I was sat in the car the other day, and a friend of mine is probably going to listen to this. She doesn't realize, but the song came on that we played at dad's funeral for literally the first time since the funeral. And like, I was sat there like, holy shit, this is like a strange feeling. You know, when you're just like frozen, it's almost like you're in a sleep paralysis.
I can literally remember the exact moment when I heard that song again.
Me too.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? And it's mad how the emotions all of a sudden like literally trigger. Yeah.
Did you get upset in the car, or did you kind of?
I did, to be honest, but I tried to hide it because I don't want to. I feel like it's a burden sometimes, and like, being completely honest, it does feel like a burden to talk to people. I'd rather talk about like positive things and other things that are happening, and I don't like to talk about myself an awful lot. Like, I'm quite a modest guy, and I don't feel like it's a burden in a sense that it's damaging to my mental health, but I
constantly am stopping myself from crying or getting upset, even though like, I preach like just crying in front of people. Like, I just cried in the middle of the office last week, but like, I still find times where like, we were on a hike a couple of weeks ago, and all of a sudden, I mean, I like lost my footing and slipped, and all of a sudden, like, I was just hit with grief, like out of nowhere. And usually I would just cry and let it out, because that's like what I preach. But there was a couple of the people there that I was like, oh, they're going to feel uncomfortable if I just start crying now. So it's so, even like 4 years on, I still find it so difficult to be able to be like, honestly emotional constantly.
Yeah, I definitely use humour as a way to talk about it in a way that's not going to make other people feel horrendously awkward. Like, people are more likely to be okay with me bringing it up when I make a joke out of it than they are if I sit and cry.
That's interesting, isn't it? How we all have like a very different way of talking about it and stuff. Like I completely agree with the whole, it just kind of hits you at certain points, you know, it manifests itself in so many different ways that it's almost, it catches you off guard quite often. Yeah. And it's not always like a long lasting feeling. Sometimes it's just like a fleeting moment where you think, oh shit,
like a stab in the chest.
Yeah.
You obviously, you're one of three then, right? One of three kids?
I'm the middle child.
So how are you finding your relationship now with your siblings and with your mum?
I definitely say it's improved. Like I said earlier, you know, we were never the sort of family to be like, to tell each other how we felt. I think we definitely opened up a little bit more before Dad died, in the months before that. But since then, it's been a lot better. You know, we were super close. Me and my sister have always got on to some degree. Me and my brother have always got on, but my sister and brother have kind of clashed a little bit at times. My sister has diabetes, and you know, she'll probably kill me for saying this, but she never used to look after herself very well, and I think she's definitely shifted, and that's had a big impact on all of our relationships as well. Because when somebody isn't feeling the best or someone isn't looking after themselves, it takes its toll on everybody else. I think it's fair to say, but she, you know, she's really trying recently, and you know, I give her a lot of credit for that. She's definitely coming of age, but we all talk a lot more. We're more open about our feelings. We tell each other we love each other. Like it feels a lot better, and we definitely feel a lot closer.
That's really nice that it's happened that way, like with you and your family. I think that's, it's so unbelievably valuable to have that support.
Yeah, for sure. I think sometimes you have to be careful that you don't slip into, oh, I wish we'd have been that way before. I don't want to say regret, because I don't really carry regrets, but one of the biggest things that troubles me sometimes is that like we've never taken photos as a family. Like it's just not been a thing. So sometimes when you kind of just want to like post something or push something out there, which again might seem like a foreign thing to some people, but you kind of get the urge sometimes, right?
Oh god,
And like we don't have any. Like I don't have any of just me and my dad, which like really cuts me up sometimes. I'm like, this is so annoying. But on the flip side of that, we have loads of him and Ada, who's my niece. He like absolutely adored her, like poured all of his love into her. So it's really nice to see that and to kind of reminisce about how much love he had for her, and obviously for everybody else as well.
That's so sweet.
Yeah. I also, on the photo front, I'm just thinking like, I think I would have been in exactly the same situation. Like, but we were in a situation where my dad was ill for like a year, but all the family photos that we have are while he was ill. Like, we don't have any really, like, I don't think we have like any family photos of before he was ill.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
So like, it's
crazy, isn't it? It's like it really is just taking the basic things for granted, which I think is one of the biggest lessons I've learned, is that you just can't, like, really, who gives a fuck, like, if you are taking silly photos with people, or you're really enjoying the moment and you're being a bit loud with some friends, or, you know, just doing some crazy stuff, because that's all that matters at the end of the day. And if you have photos to capture those memories or videos, then that's fantastic, like, if that's what you're into. And one of the things I'd say to everybody else is like, that's listening to this, that maybe hasn't experienced any of this, is take photos. Like, enjoy the moment. Yes, like live in the moment. And if that's okay for you, then great. But there may come a time where you would wish you'd had captured at least some of the moment. So it's good to have that.
A healthy balance.
For sure. Yeah, because you've got to live in the moment as well, right? So yeah, that's important.
Yeah. That's like the constant mental battle I think we have now of like wanting photos and videos, but also being aware of the fact that we spend so much time on our phones. Sometimes we don't want our phones.
Yeah.
It's so hard, isn't it?
Personal problems.
Honestly, all personal problems. It's awful that we even have to think about that, to be honest. Just because we have such addiction to technology. Terrible. Do you have many other people around you that have lost parents then, or people that you know, people that you lent on?
You know what? I don't actually. I do have someone who was close to me who lost a very close family member. So for me to talk to her about things sometimes like really helped me. Like I had, like I said, I had a lot of friends that were very supportive. And I met a lot of new people last year that were also incredibly supportive, but they just didn't quite understand. So this one person in particular, it was great to talk to her at times and just be like, look, this is how I feel. Like, did you feel the same way? And that's all you need sometimes. It's almost that validation of, am I actually going insane? Or did you have the same feelings as me?
Yeah, that was 100%. What I found the most valuable when I found Catherine lying on the floor that time. And then we became friends ever since, was I was able to see, like, I was able to be like, oh, well, I felt like this. Like, did you? And she was like, yes, of course I felt like that. And I was like, wow, I didn't realise anyone else could know what that felt like.
That's the great thing about this podcast, though, isn't it? Like, people that literally have nobody to talk to about what they're going through, they listen to this and then they're like, oh my God, like, I felt like that. It's kind of given people a community of people that they don't even know, but feel like they do, which is amazing.
Yeah, 100%. I think the voice thing helps so much as well. Like, you read forums, you read Reddit, like, the amount of pages I've read about grief is just crazy, you know, right through from Google, just some doctor's help lists and all the corporate stuff that you see all over the place, and nothing quite touches you like hearing somebody else talk about a shared experience on this level.
I agree. Yeah, that's how I felt like the first time I heard like Griefcast, if any of you have heard Griefcast. So it's a podcast by Carrie Ad Lloyd, the comedian. So that's how she advertises it, is that like it's comedians talking about grief, so that it's not, you know, it's not just like dark and gloomy, whatever. She's kind of like the first person to do it in like podcast form. And I found like a couple of those really, really valuable. And then eventually it was a lot of like older people, as in like plus 30. Oh my God, so old. But I didn't resonate with any of it. So that's why I was like, yeah, I was so glad to find people. And that's what I love so much about the fact that we do this, is because we get to speak to so many other people at our age and find so many more things ourselves, that we, because I constantly, every single episode I speak about something, you know, I discover something different about my own grief because someone's like, oh yeah, this thing, and I'm like, oh yeah, I never thought of that.
That's so true, honestly. Like I completely resonate with that you see people who are older who go through similar things, and not to discredit them at all, but it's, you kind of feel like, well, that's not me because they're older than me, or the circumstances are different. But when people are your own age, especially like late teens, early 20s, mid 20s, you're like, wow, like these guys have really had like a life-changing thing happen to them at such a young age that we all share this common bond now. Like, you really do start to like trust them, and you're on their level already.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It is life-changing. It's completely life-changing. Like, it doesn't just change, like, your home life. It has a direct effect on everything. Yeah. Like, literally everything.
Yeah, I am a completely different person to the one that I was the day before Dad died. Like, I couldn't even recognise my old self, genuinely. It's been crazy.
Me too.
And that's good, right? Like, it's, as long as you're able to channel it in a positive way, it's really good.
Yeah. Well, this is where we make the positives, I think, from, you know, the grief that we've experienced. This is how we manage to turn it into a sort of positive outlook because we're appreciative of the people that we've become because of it, I think.
Sorry, I just have a quick question. Because you said on the first anniversary you were at work, like how did you navigate, because I don't think we spoke about this much recently, is how did you navigate like work and grief? Like at the time when your dad died, what was the reaction from work? Like kind of, did you go straight back? Did you take time off?
That's a really interesting one. It happened on a Thursday. I took the next 2 weeks off. 2 weeks. And by the second week, I was like, I need to get back. I went back to work and you know what? I did so well. Like I really channeled everything positively. I was feeling good. I had to bat people away that were like sheepishly talking to me like, oh, Josh, sorry, you know, how can I help you? I'm just like, no, like I'm here to do a job. I'll do this and I'll deal with everything at home. I'd figured out a way to park my personal life, like left it in the car, essentially on the car park. And as soon as I got back in the car, I'd go home and, you know, I would worry about my mom all day. And I'd get home and, you know, like I say, I'd find her on the floor sometimes, or she'd get back from work herself and start crying. And it was really tough. Like it was so physically, mentally demanding. It was a challenge, I'm not going to lie, but somehow I managed to navigate work. They were super helpful. Like I have so much respect for them as an employer. They really did treat me with complete respect. Like there was no urgency to go back from their part. But what I think is important for me to say is that it's taken 9, 10, 11 months for it to manifest itself at work. And it's quite difficult to say that. Firstly, it's quite difficult to identify actually when it is manifesting itself, like the whole grief process. I think because I'd handled it so well for almost a year, it had caught up with me after that. And I'd heard everywhere, you know, delayed onset, all that sort of stuff. Like my mom had spoken about it. And I was like, no, it's okay. Like I'm dealing with it now. So I thought. And then what I found is that actually, you know, I started to lose my temper a little bit, and I was not the kind of person to do that. Like I lost motivation, I wasn't hungry, all of the classic signs that you get with grief. I was starting to experience them at work, and this was only like a couple of months ago. You know, truth be told, like it's still to this day a little bit of a challenge, and there are days where I think, oh, like what am I doing? Like I just need some time off. Like I really do need like a few weeks off, a few months off, because I'm a pretty busy guy with work. Like I travel a lot. And I'm so fortunate to do that, but you have no mental space for yourself. Like there's zero time. And so I think as a result, I definitely overworked myself and failed to recognize for a couple of months that actually it was starting to manifest and show itself in my day-to-day work, in my 9-to-5. So I mean, since I've recognized that, I've been able to take a step back at times and start to recognize it, but it hasn't been easy.
How were you able to recognize it? Because, yeah, I feel like you are a pretty self-aware person, but to the average person, like, how can you start to recognize those things? Or did someone else around you be like, hey, Josh, we've noticed that you're a little bit different lately? Like, because I don't know necessarily if I would have notice things like that in myself. I don't know. I mean, definitely after the first year I was a absolute state, like that temper that I literally had that for 2 years.
Samantha.
Yeah. And some people have that when you talk about the delayed onset, like who did we speak to, Catherine? Someone that we've spoken to previously, they kind of didn't really start feeling their grief till like 3 or 4 years down the line, and then all of a sudden they're like woke up one day and were like, shit, my dad died 3 years ago.
That scares me, like genuinely, like that actually plays on my mind that to your point about how did you recognize it, sometimes I question whether this is it. I'm always thinking, oh, is this the grief, like,
yeah.
And I'm quite self-aware now, like I have my own like side hustle that I work on personal branding. I help other people with their personal brand. And I think as a result of that, I've been able to really develop my mindset. I had a clinical hypnotherapist for a while that like wasn't related to dad's death at all. I just decided to do it from a personal development point of view. Okay. And I've really been able to master my mind more than I ever have done before. And I think one of the things that genuinely helped, and this sounds so cliche, and I always used to think it was cliche as well, is talking to people. And what I mean by that is I would come home or I'd be at work and something would annoy me. And I'd just say to somebody, oh, like, you know, I actually had a pretty shit day today. This person annoyed me, and I did this wrong. And because I hold myself in to such high standards in the delivery of my work and the way that I talk to people, like I'm always positive, I'm always polite, I always put people first before me. And I'd noticed I'd stopped doing that. And I kind of passed it off to the side a bit and thought, work's quite stressful at the moment. You know, I just changed roles. It must just be that. But then actually it continued. And what I found was that I was actually not being nice to people. And I was being a bit snappy with my mom. And I think when I recognized that I'd said something to my mom. It wasn't even like super out of line, but it was a little bit snappy. And I found myself getting annoyed at my mom. And I was like, Josh, that's too much. Like, you shouldn't be doing this. Something is wrong. You need help. And I had this immense feeling of like overwhelm where I was like, okay, I'm not doing anything for my business at the moment. I've had to park that. My 9-to-5 job is like crippling me at the moment mentally. I don't have any time to see people. My emotional energy is focused on making sure my mom is okay, my granddad is okay after my nan passed away. And I was like overwhelmed, like super, super, super. And this is, I mean, I'm only talking like a couple of months ago now, so it's relatively fresh. And then I, you know, as cliche as it is, again, using that word, like I sat myself down and I said, look, Josh, like you have to change this. And the only person that will change this is you. And the only way to escape your mind is to work through the problems and to start journaling or to start writing lists and really map out how exactly you're feeling and how things are making you feel and recognize that to actually have any change, it starts with you. Nobody else can do that.
Love that.
This is honestly so me right now. Like, I'm finding my 9-to-5 like quite stressful at the moment. I'm exhausted all the time, getting home from work, got no motivation to do anything, but I know that it's my head and my mind, and it's knowing that it's you, but then it's like having the motivation to do something about it. And I think that's a massive thing when you're grieving as well, is not letting yourself be consumed by the grief and building a resilience to it and knowing when you're behaving in certain ways and having the strength in your mind to battle it. I think, oh yeah, it's difficult.
I love that you you posted the day, didn't you, about going for a walk, going for a hike?
Yes, my life.
Oh my God, for me, that, like, I have to say exercise has been such an incredible relief for me.
Yeah. Like, it's so important. I literally can't even like just can't recommend it enough to everybody. I love it.
Yeah, like I'm a pretty slim guy, tall. People used to call me lanky, people still do, but like I never hit the gym. I would honestly run a mile from the gym. I'd be the guy that bought a gym membership because I felt like I needed to,
and never
go for a year. Like, how crazy. I've genuinely been going to the gym like 3-4 times a week. I've been putting exercises like really at the front of what I need to be doing as part of my routine, and it's helped me so much. Like, some days, even when I feel like I just don't want to go, I go, I work out, and I feel incredible. This is how crazy it is. People listening to this will know that I've never been a morning person, and I start going to the gym at 6:30 in the morning. Like, who the hell is this guy?
That is so me. I am the worst morning person ever, and now I live for a morning gym session. Absolutely live for it.
And how good do you feel afterwards, though? I mean, yeah, you feel tired, but like, how good mentally do you feel once you've smashed that out?
Really sets you up for the day. Like, oh, it's so good.
So I will talk about like my experience with that as well. And also, like, I think it's so important. I think it's so important to do those things, but to not, what's the word? Like, sacrifice like your sleep and spending time with friends and things like that. Because I would have listened to, you know, lots of people saying that they would get up like 5 a.m. go to the gym, blah blah. And for a whole year, I was that person that literally alarm went off at 4:30. I was at the gym at 5. I was like on my way to work at like 6:30. Started work at like 7, and like just absolutely like what would sound like and look like I was like smashing the day. But then I realized I was like not getting anywhere near my 8 hours of sleep. I was just like making excuses not to go see friends because I was like, no, I need to eat healthily because it's great for my mind. And but you don't have to do it constantly. Like, you need to ensure that you find balance in definitely exercise, yes, but it doesn't have to be like huge gym sessions or morning gym sessions. It can be like just walk, like going for walks, but making sure that you're still spending time with friends and family and not sacrificing that for.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that because it's so true. Like, my mom is not the kind of lady that likes to exercise, but I've said to her, look, just go for a small walk around the block. Like, it will take 5 minutes, genuinely 5 minutes, maybe like 10 if you're walking slow. And she started to see a little bit of difference every time she does go for a walk. Like, she might walk to the shops or she might walk to town. It's not about copying other people's routines. And I learned this as well. Like, you know, I saw people who had these routines, like the 5 a.m. club, get up at 5, bash out 3 hours of work, go to your day job, come home, carry on with more work, go to the gym, eat well, blah, blah, blah. But it just doesn't work for everybody. You have to find out what works for you specifically and try everything out. Wake up at 5 for a week. If it doesn't work out, that's fine. Sleep until 8. Find out what works for you and your body. And then,
I love that. It will help. I love that point.
I think also, especially going on with what you said, Sam, those 8 hours of sleep, man, like, you can't beat them. Sleep is life. Sleep is a healer.
Yeah, I've only discovered that this year. Genuinely only discovered sleep this year.
Yeah, I used to go mad at her for it. She used to drive me mental. Like, when she was going through this phase of getting up at 4:30 in the morning, like, she would spend whole weekends just on her own, feeling like shit. Like, just not happy with you, Sam, at all. But, like, feeling like you should be happy because you were living what looked like a really put together, literally, living your best life.
To anyone else, when I would say, I'd be sat at my desk at like 7 a.m. and everyone would be like, wow. And I'd be like, oh yeah, I went to gym at 4:30. And everyone's like, wow, that's amazing. Whereas people should have said to me, what the fuck? Go to bed.
I think that's it. Like, perception is just such a funny thing, isn't it? Like, people's perception of what good is and what good should be. Like, if that's one of the biggest lessons I've learned, it's just around not caring what other people think and not trying to conform to what other people think is good. Because, like, everybody has their own path. Everybody has their own things that they like, enjoy, dislike, whatever. Just figure out what it is and just embrace it. Like you say, if you want to sleep 8, 9, 10 hours a night, then do it. Just as long as at the same time you're still doing things that matter, like eating well, sleeping, getting the right amount of sleep in, exercising in whatever capacity you can exercise, that sort of stuff.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, 100%. So would you say that, like, your experience and everything that you've been through and the way that it's kind of, like, shaped your mindset a little bit now, do you think that's kind of affected your relationships? Like, have you kind of, like, distanced yourself from some people or become closer to people who are on the same kind of wavelength as you?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I'm a single guy. I have not had a relationship since my dad died, which obviously is just over a year. But
same as me and Sam.
Yeah,
I think it's an interesting one. You know what? I really struggle with like, commitment. And not from, like, that sleazy guy wants to date loads of girls perspective, because that's the impression people get. But I don't know. It's just, I feel like I don't have the emotional capacity.
Preach.
But
yes.
Like, I've said this to a girl, and bless her, she is the most considerate, like, understanding person probably that I've ever met. But actually, I don't think anybody else quite understands that emotional gap that you have, that you just feel like you're not ready for it. And you sometimes question whether you ever will be.
Yeah, 100%. I feel that.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I think you just become more aware of who you invest your time into as well. And, like, life is exhausting. Like, it really is. And I think everything that we've been through is exhausting, and we're all trying to be better people. And I think the commitment of putting aside some of that time to somebody else, I think, is scary. And I don't know, I find it terrifying. And Yeah, it definitely is a commitment thing, but not in the in the sleazy way. Just in commitment of time.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel that too. Especially at the minute, I'm like, because it changed the way that I'm like looking at life, and I'm so conscious of how I'm spending my years and like my time. I'm like, I don't want to waste time with someone who's like not going to be the right person. So then I don't even bother going out like meeting anyone, because I'm like, the universe will bring this person to me.
I definitely feel you on that one.
I was dating somebody recently, and like, I just couldn't bring myself to like commit to it, because it just, the whole thing just freaked me out. And I was never like that before my mum died, and now I think I run away from it a little bit, which is something that I think I'll have to work on going forward.
Oh, like, I really understand that. Like, genuinely, like, you feel like you don't, you're not like that soppy, lovey-dovey kind of person. It's almost like you're a bit cold-hearted.
I feel like a bit of a bitch.
Yeah.
And I'm not. I honestly have so much love. It's unreal. Like, it seeps from me. But yeah, I don't know what
I
it
remember
is.
Remember you saying that to me, Catherine? You were like, I just feel like I am being a bitch to him. Like,
and I don't know why. I don't think I was being a bitch, but I think I wasn't investing as much of myself into it as I should have been doing, you know? And it made me feel like I was being a bitch.
No, well, if there's anything I've learned tonight, it's that I'm not alone in this, which is, which is comforting.
Preach,
definitely not. You see, this is why Sam and I always say, and I'm going to say it again, like we always do, we're going to end up with somebody that's also got a dead parent, because you're just going to find each other on a level, you know? Or if not a dead parent, then a dead something that they've been through some sort of trauma.
I'm still to this day like attracted to anyone that's been through a traumatic experience. Just that's like the top of the list.
I think it's the emotional intelligence, though, isn't it? You know how to approach situations. You know not to be that person that's like, oh, sorry, awkward. Like share something in common, and you kind of know the boundaries as well. Like, you can recognize if they're not really talkative today. You don't need to be like, oh, like, babe, what's up? Like, are you feeling okay? Like, is this a
just know.
It's like, you know, you need some space today. That's cool. Like, I'll go off and I'll do my thing. You do your thing, and we'll come back tonight or tomorrow, and we'll chat and we'll, you know, we'll
because one
it.
Thing
exactly. This is why we need a DPC.
Right, it needs to happen. I'm going to contact Tinder straight after this. Also, just a side note, well, kind of not a side note, like on the topic of like just people that just understand and like know how to deal with that, because I've been finding it honestly lately pretty exhausting because I've only been here in Australia for 8 months. So, but all my friends here are obviously new friends, and I have to, I mean, bless them. They all try their very best to know how to deal with me when I am, you know, feeling down, or if I have a day where like the grief is, when I'm having like a bad grief day or a dad sad day, and they will ask me, Sam, what do you need right now? What do you need from us? What do you need us to do? Which I totally appreciate, but it's pretty, I didn't really realize how exhausting it is to have to explain that to people 4 years on to be, this is what I need from you right now. Because I think I took that for granted, that I definitely take it, oh, I don't know if I did. I took it for granted when I had like, when I was living with like Kat and the girls, and they just knew what needed to happen on those days. Whereas now I'm finding myself having to explain. I'm like, wow, this is really, it's actually challenging to explain as well, because sometimes you don't even know, right?
Mm, that's a really interesting point. Yeah. I think another thing I've experienced as well is fairly similar to that, but it's almost like people forget what you've been through. And I don't expect people to like recognize and be like, oh, you know, Josh, your dad died, I know, blah, blah, blah. But they just don't get that actually some days you need to be by yourself. Or like, one thing that I was quite shocked by was like jokes, memes, like that whole culture where people would send stuff to group chats or to me, and it'd be like really insensitive. And I'd be like, you do realize that my dad died, like, and I don't really want to see this meme about a dad related thing, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's super interesting. I guess my advice to you is And I think you'll probably find that your friendship circles will change a little bit, and you'll identify like the people that in Australia that do stand out to you as the ones that recognize you more. I think it's just a case of just being bluntly honest with people sometimes. Like, if you don't want to talk to people today, just be like, look, this is what I need. I just need some time out. Like, you go do what you want. That's great. And I'm happy for you, but I'm just going to sit here and do nothing all day.
Last week when I was literally stood at the bar ordering an espresso martini at like 6 p.m. and just started crying. And so I was like, I need to go home. And the girl's like, oh, we'll come with you. And I was like, please don't. That would be the worst thing ever.
I've got a friend, God bless her, I love her. Whenever we're at like a social occasion or like just like chilling with all the girls and stuff, she knows me so well. She turns around to me sometimes and she looks at me and she goes, you don't want to be here, do you? And I'm like, Emma, like, you're so right. I really don't. And she always knows. I'm like, damn, girl, like, you've got me down to a T.
That's so good, because then I think then like they can even recognize things that you don't really know. Like, I've got someone, she's a really close friend of mine, who sometimes is like, is this related to this, or, you know, is this because of this? And they almost piece together the puzzle for you, like, even sometimes.
So true.
So
do you think then, or do you know how exactly losing your dad has kind of changed the way that you go about life? I mean, I also am totally appreciating here that you are only 1 year on, but how has the way you look at life and your attitude towards it changed?
Can I add another question to that, actually, just I think it's related, is this, so your kind of side hustle now is a personal branding,
yeah that's right.
Did that come after your dad died, or was it something you were working on beforehand?
Yeah, cool. So the personal branding stuff came after. I had started working on like an affiliate marketing business, and I still do dabble in it. You know, it's still something I'm passionate about. But the personal branding stuff came because, and this is a change I've noticed, is that life is all about chasing your passions. Now, I'm going to sound like a cliche guy that's like quoting stuff here, but it genuinely is. Like, it really does not matter what you do in life, like how much money you earn, what your job title is, like what car you drive, as long as you are happy and fulfilled. Now, like, I always used to chase happiness and used to think that it would come at a certain point. And since dad's died, I've been able to understand that actually, like, happiness is in the moment, and you really do appreciate just being present. I think one of the biggest things I've learned is to be present, whether that's with friends, whether it's like, I go for a hike and I sit on top of a hill and I don't have my phone out, I don't take photos, I just sit there and I think, and sometimes I don't even think about anything. I meditate often, so I'm able to like capture any negative thoughts and just kind of like remove them, push them to the side. It's really changed my life so far, and I had a lot of momentum. After dad died, immediately I was like, right, I genuinely have two options now. Like, I can let myself crumble and I can not support my sister, my mom, my brother, my niece, my granddad, whoever, or I can really thrive from it. And, you know, I chose to thrive from it. And yes, I dipped a couple of months ago and took my foot off the gas and really did struggle, but I've picked it up a lot more now. And I think what I've been able to do is show more compassion to people, be more present in situations, enjoy myself a lot more, and really let go of what doesn't matter. Like, I'm big on building myself up to become the best possible version of myself. And the personal branding stuff came as a result of that. Like, I love helping other people. So if I can even help one person just get noticed a bit more in the office place by building a personal brand, or build a reputation for themselves, or get a job or another opportunity, then that's incredible. And for me, that's what matters. There was one thing that like stuck out about my dad that he, and I only realized this like since he died, is that he was a very compassionate person and cared a lot more about what like helping other people. We had this this debate like years ago about which political party we voted for, and I at the time was like, oh, I voted for the Tories because I'm going to be better off for it at the end of the month, you know, he's going to have more money in my back pocket. And he said to me like, you're ridiculous, Josh. And I was like, what? Like, no, I'm not. And he's like, you're ridiculous. Like, why would you vote for a party that is going to make you better off when there are so many people out there that are struggling paycheck to paycheck, who are homeless, people who are, you know, can't put food on the table at night, they can't afford like sanitary towels and all that sort of stuff. And I was like, okay, yeah, whatever. But then afterwards, like in the last year or so, I've really thought, wow, like that's a powerful thing to say. Like my dad really did genuinely care about other people more than he did himself. And yeah, we funny enough, we laugh and we joke about it, but because he was so stressed about other things and keeping everybody happy, that like that's eventually what caused the dissection. But
like because his heart was just so big for the people.
Well, because he was just so stressed, like trying to carry everybody and trying to help everybody, and like all the time, and like, you know, he carried the burden of a lot of people so that they didn't have to carry it themselves. And it's really stuck with me. I think that's kind of like my mantra now, is just like always put people first and treat them as best as possible, and you know, good things come back to you as well.
Yeah, just make sure you don't suffer the same fate.
Well, of course, I'm a lot more chilled out, so I'm confident that it's not, but yeah, let's hope.
I think it's amazing that you've taken this whole situation and made it into something positive for the people. Like, it's such an important thing to do.
Yeah, there is one little tip actually, I guess I should share. So as part of the hypnotherapy I did, I learned how to reframe negative thoughts into powerful positive opposites. And it might sound like wacky talk, but this has been one of the techniques that has single-handedly helped me transform my mindset, like literally from the moment my dad died. It's whenever you recognize you get a negative thought. So if you're late for the bus, you think, oh shit, I'm gonna be late for work now, like I'm gonna have a bad day. Immediately capture that thought in your head and be like, recognize it, say stop, and then you tell yourself you love yourself. So you say, I love you, I disagree, I missed that bus, but it's absolutely fine because the next bus is going to be 2 minutes away and I'm still going to make it to the office on time. But if I'm late, it doesn't matter because I'll just stay behind for an extra couple of minutes. And that alone has honestly transformed my life, because I'm able to take every single negative situation, pause, recognize it, positively rewire my neurons. And it's scientifically proven, like you can see underneath a, what's the word I'm looking for? Underneath a microscope, that neurons that fire together wire together, and when they wire together, it's a lasting effect.
That's like, and that saying, like friends that gym together stay together.
Yeah, it's so true.
Friends that grieve together stay together.
Yeah, I love it. And you see like various analogies as well, like of like if you had what 20 something thousand pounds and somebody sold £10 off you, would you let that ruin your day, blah blah blah, same amount of seconds in a day. And it's true, like it has various forms.
Yeah, such a big thing that like, this whole self affirmation thing at the moment is massive as well, like, and I think it's really good, like you said, like taking that negative thought and then saying out loud like, no, I love you, and like, you're doing great. Mm-hmm. And like, just transform it into something positive.
It's difficult though.
My friends take the piss out of me constantly, because no matter what the negative thing is that happens, whether it is like we missed the bus or, you know, someone like broke a leg or something, I'll just be like, look, everything happens for a reason. There's a reason that happened. And, you know, maybe I was meant to be late for work today because blah, blah, blah. And then I'll notice something like great about the day and I'm like, that's why that happened. Like, I literally, every single situation now, almost to my detriment, I'm like, you know, there'll be a positive here somewhere.
That's so powerful though. It's so impressive that you can do that, because it's not easy.
So, I can't do it every day, awesome. I'll be completely honest, like the days where I'm just like dying.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, so you've given some phenomenal advice thus far, but what would you say to someone who has just experienced a similar thing that you did, if their parent has, you know, just died? What advice would you give to them?
It's a big question, isn't it? Because there's so much that you kind of want to say to people. I think the real core things are, it's okay to be feeling whatever you're feeling, and that it's not the way that you will always feel, whether that's immense sadness, whether it's confusion, loss, like pain, like physical pain. I think it's important to remember that won't last forever. You will experience it again, but there will also be positives that go with that. talk to people. Everybody says this. You see it, you know, Mental Health Awareness Week. It's okay to not be okay. Talk to people. But it genuinely helps. Like, I wouldn't be where I am today if I wasn't able to tell my mom some of the things I've told her. If I haven't been able to tell my friends around me, and even like employers, like, you know, like your boss, just be like, look, this is, I'm not good today. Like, I'm not going to come in. I think that's important as well. And then apart from like the tangible things I've said, like journaling, setting yourself small goals so you can actually tick them off as a win. That's a big thing. And generally trying to live a more positive lifestyle if it's possible. I appreciate not everybody is wired the same in the sense that they're not always the most positive people, but there is always a positive to find. Like, and I'm sorry if somebody says that there's not, I disagree. There will always be a positive. So really try your hardest to find that.
Huge.
Love that. Yeah, you're fantastic. I'm so glad that you found us and you've come on.
Honestly, like, thank you guys so much. Like, it's, I was so nervous beforehand and I could almost feel myself like welling up, getting a bit much to start with, but genuinely talking to you guys has been incredible and I'm super, super grateful for it. And I look forward to continued relationships with the two of you. Like, you know,
this is how all our friendships really start now. We literally,
I've got so many internet friends now.
Yeah, like, so many DPC friends.
It's funny, isn't it? You never meet these people, like, or months, years pass, and then you finally, eventually, get to meet them. It's like, wow.
We need as soon as I'm home, Catherine. We need to do a meetup.
Yeah, I know, desperately. Desperately.
Is there anything else, Josh, that you really wanted to get across or say that you perhaps haven't had the opportunity to yet?
I don't think so. I guess the one thing is just like, I'm super grateful to everybody who's helped me. You know, it is a journey and it will continue to be, but without the people that I've had and the people that are probably listening to this, or will probably see this on my Instagram when I tag you guys afterwards and once it's all ready, then, you know, thank you so much, from like the barber that cuts my hair to the friends that I haven't spoken to for a while, or the friends that are just happy to sit there in silence with me. And yeah, like,
I love
appreciate
that.
All of them.
And well, I think it's amazing that you, I mean, I'm always baffled how people like 1 year on can have this outlook. So
have this conversation with us, to be honest, as well.
Yeah, true. And what I would also say to you, Josh, is like, don't be like shocked or disheartened if, you know, a year down the line, you don't feel the same way you do right now, because it is such a journey. Like, it's so hard to be this. It is so hard to be this positive all the time. That's one of the most valuable things that I get from this podcast, is speaking to people that are 8-10 years into their grief and still feel the same way. It's a journey.
I think especially when like Sam and I can really empathize with you, because both of us are also very, very positive people, and people expect us to be positive all the time. Which obviously it's not always that easy. So yeah, just make sure that, you know, you take time for yourself and it's okay not to always be upbeat.
Yeah, 100%. I appreciate that. I think that's honestly such great advice. Yeah, thank you.
Wow. What a way to start a Friday morning, guys.
What a way to end the Thursday evening. I'm going to go and join my family now in the house and leave this car.
Oh my god, Josh, speaking of being insensitive, earlier Kat was like, I'm in the car, and I was like, I'm in my mom's car, and I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. But I didn't even notice it straight away. I was like, oh shit.
Also, a quick one on being insensitive, a local shopping center to me put out a status today saying, exciting news, Card Factory are officially opening their doors at Brian's Quay tomorrow. Bang on time for Father's Day. Tag someone who still needs to get their Father's Day card. Well, you
did you tag me?
Father's Day card, isn't there?
I've been screenshotting every like Father's Day ad that I've been shown for like the past 3 weeks. So fucking many.
Oh, it's ridiculous. One thing I will say that's good about that, I posted about the other day, there's an app called, or a company called Thoughtful that honestly have the most amazing cards. They email me to say, hey, look, Father's Day is coming up. We appreciate it. It's a sensitive time for some people. If you'd like to opt out of emails for this, please let us know. So, like, literally, pink straight away.
Yes, the best.
But then the irony is, on the tube, like, literally every morning, the tube stop that I have to get off at, right in front of you, I view is Father's Day. Don't forget to buy your presents. Blah blah blah. Like, it's so
literally
funny.
It's brutal, man. It's like a war zone out there for Mother's Day and Father's Day events. Like, oh.
Stay also, strong, kids.
Yes,
really quick side note before I run away. I'm actually going to a breakfast tasting this morning. What about you guys? Anyway, I'm thinking of calling, I think it's the 14th, Friday the 14th, just before Father's Day, a Fatherless Friday. So I'm going to be sharing lots of Fatherless Friday stuff on there.
I love that. It's my mom's birthday that Friday, so I will gladly join you in that, and I will be celebrating my mom's birthday with her. So,
gorgeous. Perfect. Well, thank you so much, guys.
Thank you so much.
No, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's DPC podcast. We hope you've enjoyed it as much as we have and have found some comfort in the stories that you've heard today.
If you've resonated with anything we've said, have any questions or want to get involved, please do contact us. We're on Instagram. It's at DPC Podcast. You can email us on dpcpodcast@hotmail.com, or we have a contact form on our website, www.dpcpodcast.co.uk.
We have a whole bunch of resources over on our website. More information about dealing with grief, losing a parent, and professionals to contact if you should need it.
Because as Kat so eloquently said in our first podcast, we're not providing healthcare, we're just chatting shit.
If you think this podcast could help someone, then we would love for you to share it.
We upload new podcasts every week, so make sure you subscribe so you don't miss out.
Loads of love
from Sam
and Kat.
See you next Tuesday.
Nailed it.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.